It's just spinning. Oh, wait. Hang on. Are you there?
Yeah, now it's recording.
Okay.
Oh, it's the threat of leaving. That's
yeah, it was like, I don't want to lose you.
I don't want to live without
you. That's right. Yeah, I think that's the right note for us to start on. Yeah. So welcome to Sons of the Double Cheeseburger. I'm Brandon.
I'm Kevin. Hi.
And we're both sons.
Of the same person, which is real nice.
The same person for who we have named Double Cheeseburger.
Right, we have a shared contextual history, which makes some things that's easier. Right.
You're gonna have to go back and listen to old episodes to find out all that story, though. Mm-hmm. So, Kevin, how are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. Today is a National Pretzel Day.
So oh, pretzel. That's good. Hey, what's your favorite way to eat pretzels?
Chewing, swallowing.
Oh
no!
So you don't drink them anymore?
No. I like, you know, I think I ultimately prefer a soft pretzel, big, huge, German style soft pretzel, not too much salt on it, and I don't think it typically would need any dipping if it's really a good pretzel, you know. People swear
well,
by
sure, I don't think it needs dipping.
Whatever, but, well, I think like if you go like to Auntie Annie's or one of these other places, those need something to dip it in because that's not really great pretzel.
Sure.
So,
I'm just saying, I don't know that it needs anything, but sometimes dipping it in like some cheese or
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just
mustard.
But, you know something is good when you don't even have to.
Take
it straight.
What's your preferred cheese for dipping pretzels? Is it blue cheese?
No. My blue cheese is never my preferred cheese in any situation. Except for which cheese would I like to throw out? That is blue cheese, definitely.
Well, of course.
And I've never had
blue
cheese.
You look at it and go, oh, this went bad.
I've never had blue cheese. So.
Neither have I. I'm not going to. Yeah. Just to be clear, if we show up for an episode and you're like, hey, today the thing we're tasting is blue cheese, then the episode before that's the last episode of Sons of the Double Cheeseburger.
I understand that cheese is that sort of thing where, sure, it's going to mold and whatnot, but I have not tried any of the cheeses that have molded. It's just,
no.
There's plenty of other cheese.
Not intentionally.
And maybe that's just fine. Like my American palate is weak. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's just Americans. I think there's really, it's a very, very small subset, geographically speaking, that likes to eat cheese that has molded. So,
and even if it is our palates, we already established we're simple folk.
We are. Kill people.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly
give
right.
Give us some good squirrel.
Yeah.
Some moonshine.
So, okay, I'm going to go dig deeper on pretzels. So if you're eating a crunchy pretzel, do you like them just like just plain up? Do you like the, how do you feel about the peanut butter filled pretzel?
They're okay. Peanut butter filled pretzel that's covered in chocolate.
That's where I was going.
It's not
next.
Even really a pretzel
that's...
anymore, but it all works. There's pretzel component, chocolate component, peanut butter component. It all works.
It's really just a candy bar at that point.
It is kind of like the like you can go to Costco and buy the double chocolate muffin with pieces of chocolate in it. That's just a piece.
Yeah,
that's a piece of cake. Mm. That's a cupcake, my friend.
That's what I call breakfast. Yeah, that's good.
But that is. That's, you know, that, calling that a muffin. I mean, I guess all muffins are really just cake, right? But at that point, you're just serving chocolate cake.
Yeah, but that's more. Yeah.
And I think it's a delicious tasting muffin, but, you know, yeah.
You know what really makes that good? Just a big scoop of ice cream on top of that.
Say, dipping it in cheese?
That's coke.
Cool.
I'm not from Wisconsin here. Come on now.
Yeah. I'm sure that's great with some ice cream. You warm it up a little bit, put some ice cream on it.
Yeah.
Delicious.
I used to do that for breakfast at work. Yeah. I would just sit in my office and just get out a chocolate muffin. You know, kind of break it up a little bit, put some ice cream on top of that.
Did your work offer mental health care services? Did anyone approach from HR?
No. Our HR was off-site, so I was safe in that regard. Nice. And I was using the eating my feelings as the mental health component for work. So, yeah. A little whipped cream on there.
Oh, dear God.
I just call that doing breakfast right, man.
Sure. I mean, I bet you feel good the rest of the day. It doesn't sit too heavy or anything, right?
So good. So good. Because you go through that logy stage, right? You're like, oh. And then you get the sugar crash.
Right.
That's good. So then you fall asleep at your desk until lunch.
At which point you have a few martinis and a big old piece of meat, and then you sleep through to the end of the day.
Yeah, usually just get like a big, big sausage and several. Actually, I don't usually have sausage and martinis together.
No, I think that's pretty non-traditional.
That's not an ideal pairing.
What you could do is get like those big, like Landjäger sausages, or those, those kind of traveling sausages that some Central Eastern European countries do. You know, I know the Germans obviously have those
sausages.
That's what it is, right? I mean, it's the sort of thing like you read old stories like, or I've stuck some hard bread in your sack with some sausages and cheese, and you're just going to eat on that for the next 4 days. And it's like,
yeah,
the sausages, they've obviously worked that out, the bread, sure. I'm worried about that cheese, that there's this wrapped in some cloth, you eat that for 4 days after you've been hiking around. But
well, you're either getting a really hard cheese, or you go the more like the, I think it was the Bedouin route, you put milk in there, and then that turns into yogurt and cheese something. That's another thing I don't want to eat, by the way. And again, if it makes me weak, that's fine. I don't want to eat food that just naturally transforms itself into another food without any professional attention. I'm just going to be, you know what I'm saying? I will eat yogurt.
Okay, without professional
attention.
Cheese,
I will,
because I was talking, like, a lot of basically your beers and alcohols.
Yeah. No, that's fine.
Transforming.
I don't want something that accidentally turned into a different food product.
Yeah, like a food that someone said, oh, geez, I left my milk out, but I am so hungry right now, I'm just going to eat this anyway.
Yeah. No, I'm not doing that. I need to know that someone has cultivated that and said, now it's curds and whey, or yogurt, or ice cream.
So I should...
I don't think it actually naturally turns into ice cream while you're traveling.
So as we kind of transition here, I should probably let everyone know what you hear in the background. I'm not like in some, field, idyllic field or whatever. We have chickens in our living room right now.
It's good.
Baby chickens, chicks, as they're called. And they're,
is that standard in Aurora?
They are peeping like nobody's business. But it is standard in Aurora when your children go to a school where they also have chickens that they raise as part of their classroom curriculum. Yeah. And the classroom is shut down because of a COVID case. So someone has to take them home. Of course, it was us. Why not us?
There you go. I like it.
So we've got chickens.
That's good. So
can you hear
so
them?
Today it's
I mean, they're going nuts.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's great. Oh, it's good.
Oh,
I like it. It's good.
My
background.
Wife is in the we're recording. My wife's in the background trying to get in the action.
Is she inflaming the chicks?
She is inflaming the chicks right now.
Oh, she's making the mayhem. I think we should give her a producer credit.
Yeah, okay.
On this thing. Yeah. Okay. I was going to say that means today's episode is you and me and your peeps.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah. So, all right. So that's, and so the kids are home. That you've led into that point as well. I believe you just told me that their testing situation is such that they should be able to return to school soon. Is that right?
Yeah, they'll finish off this week. I mean, it's the start of the week, so they will go this week virtually, and then they will hopefully, assuming everyone else behaves, they will go back to school on next Monday.
Nice. Nice. Zachary is also scheduled to go back to in-person school next Monday.
Oh, excellent.
He has been out for 13 months. Mm. So this has been a long road, but he's just about there.
Well, that's excellent. Does he enjoys being in person?
He does. He does. He's done really, really well with seeing like staff in particular that he knows and that he had spent a lot of time with in person. So I think he'll be excited to get back with them.
That's good. I think we're all, most people had reached that point, or well past that point,
yes,
of craving some element of both what they were used to and just a different schedule, different structure. Yeah. So I'm happy for him.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that and seeing how that goes for him. And okay. So, hey, I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
I have a baseball quiz, actually.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. So I was thinking about, this is sort of general about baseball, but I was thinking to myself, who made the playoffs the most in the last 10 years?
So which team?
Which team? And yeah, not an individual. That would also be very interesting, because I think there are some individuals who changed teams and maybe made playoffs.
Right. Like there was that time, I don't know, this is hockey, but like Marian Hossa, like every team he played for went to the Stanley Cup Finals for a period of years.
Well, or Ben Zobrist is another example. He went was with, I think he was with the Rays, and they were succeeding. And then he went to the Royals. They won a championship. Then he came to the Cubs, and they won a championship. So, you know, there are players like that. But so I skipped 2020 because it was sort of, you know, one skips 2020 for the reasons one will historically. I just went with the decade of the 2010s. So I want it. It probably isn't that hard to guess.
Dodgers.
There are two teams that both made the playoffs the most times.
Dodgers and
they
Astros.
Tied for the. Oh no, Dodgers is right.
Ooh.
But remember, the Astros were awful, like the Cubs for the first half.
Yeah. So
half
is
of
the other
decade.
Team American or National League?
Other team's an American League team.
Well, now, is it the Rays?
It is not the Rays. They made it four times.
Well, the Yankees have their poor things are going through some hard times right now. But
see, you've been fooled. The Yankees didn't win a World Series in
the
2010s.
They've been to the playoffs virtually every year.
They went to the playoffs seven times.
Right.
Which speaks to that very, and think about it, the Dodgers went to the playoffs seven times and didn't win a World Series in any of those years.
Right. I like at this point, you can say, okay, well, you know, the Nationals have won a World Series, the Cubs have won a World Series, the Astros have won a World Series, asterisk, and then, you know, but you would never confuse, and the Dodgers have won one World Series. But I don't think there's any confusion which has been the best team in the National League. Now, obviously, I mentioned the Astros, which are an American League team, but
right,
the Dodgers far and away have been the most consistently great team in the National League over the last decade, right? Like, by far.
Absolutely.
Other than, like, there were, like, 2016, the Cubs were better than them, but it wasn't a huge gap. And
right. Well, I think three years in a row that the Cubs and the Dodgers played the National League Championship Series against each other?
I think that might be the case, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was, and the Dodgers have just, you know.
And then the Dodgers succeeded at developing talent, which the Cubs stopped doing. And the Dodgers spent money, which the poor Ricketts family cannot do.
Yeah, you know, the Dodgers, no one thinks about the Dodgers or should think about the Dodgers in terms of the money they spend to acquire players. Because while, let's say, for instance, most recently they acquired Well, Trevor Bauer.
Trevor Bauer.
They just signed.
Yep.
And Trevor Bauer is a conversation all of his own.
Mm-hmm.
A good and bad conversation. Mookie Betts, the year before, acquiring him.
Yep.
Yes, they ended up paying him a huge sum of money, but they acquired him with their prospect capital.
Well, so they did two things. That's an it's a good point, yes. But they acquired him with prospect capital, but they also acquired him because they were willing to take on David Price's contract.
Mm-hmm.
So by taking on a huge contract and giving up prospects, they got Mookie Betts, who they gave another huge contract to.
I mean, the reality is, the Dodgers, if you look at the luxury tax threshold as essentially a salary cap.
Right.
Because that's essentially what it is. The Dodgers don't have any more money to spend than anybody else.
Right.
What the Dodgers do well is spending money on premier pieces and then paying inexpensive salaries to guys that they develop to fill in everywhere else.
Right.
By the way, the Cubs could do that if they wanted to. Mm-hmm. If the Cubs wanted to develop players or not trade their players that were in fact developing for stopgap pieces.
Yeah.
See, that's where I'm most disappointed in the Cubs run is that when they actually had some people where they could have used to enhance the Major League Ball Club in a better long-term way, they instead used those to acquire what? I'm not even sure in the end what we got out of some of those deals. So,
right. But see, I think that they thought that, you know, the Cubs, I think the Cubs were pretty upfront in saying, we're going to try to develop position players and then we will acquire pitching because we think that pitching is more variable, more difficult to predict. So we're going to wait to acquire pitching after it has shown itself.
But they also had the intention, remember, that they talked about having waves and waves of talent, which included pitchers and position players.
Mm-hmm.
But the trouble is they had to switch to, well, we'll buy pitching, and we'll buy it based upon, you know, guys that have already been hurt or guys who have now shown that they have a track record or shown a skill because they couldn't develop any of their own. That was plan B, really.
Right.
And with position players, they stopped developing position players after like 2017.
Yep.
Like Ian Happ is the last position player of any note to come up. And then that's.
Yeah, the pipeline just stopped.
And that's, and part of that with the positional talent is because they could have had Gleyber Torres come up at some point. Mm-hmm. Whether or not Gleyber Torres is he's a mixed bag.
Sure.
But he's better than what they've had at second base much of that time,
mm-hmm.
at least offensively. They could have had Eloy Jimenez. I shed a tear for that one, come up. They've had, you know, they just did a poor job of drafting and a poor job of developing what they drafted.
Right.
And, you know, great. The Ricketts are exactly the sort of people that want us to think, yeah, but you won a World Series. Isn't that what you always wanted?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that sounds like some sort of old fable. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that to get what you want, you have to give up everything else. That shouldn't have to be the case as a fan for a team that is wealthy and seems to say they're committed to developing an infrastructure. I don't know how within a matter of like 3 years. When they were saying we're going to build a world-class infrastructure, that suddenly they were a decade behind everyone else in terms of talent evaluation and development.
Right. I agree with
you. There was some time warp in baseball there, and the Cubs completely missed it. They must have been, I don't know, while they were trying to name the Marquee Network or market Wrigley Field as a CEO playground or something. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know how much of that was all the business side guys. I think we believed that the baseball people they brought in were gonna successfully make this pipeline of talent. But like, I'm looking at the Dodgers right now, and the Dodgers starting rotation Well, here, I'll back into it this way. David Price is in the bullpen for the Dodgers,
mm-hmm.
and they're paying $16 million, and the Red Sox are paying $16 million for David Price to be in the bullpen this year.
And David Price is a thief.
Listen, David Price had great years. He earned his money, and you know the fact that somebody was willing to pay him $32 million at age 35 is not his fault.
No, you're right. You're right, but
if he hadn't taken it, you'd have been like, that was a dumb choice, Dave.
Right. If I were David Price, though, I'm guessing he isn't complaining about being in the bullpen. I sure wouldn't be at that stage.
Oh, he flat out said, put me wherever you need me. I want whatever helps the team, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But part of the reason he's in the bullpen is he can't get past Dustin May, mm-hmm. Walker Buehler, and Julio Urias, who are ages 23, 26 and 24, all developed by the Dodgers.
We also can't get past Clayton Kershaw.
I was going to say can't get past Clayton Kershaw, who developed a decade before that, and can't get past Trevor Bauer, who they signed. So they used. I mean, that's the problem. Is that when you just compare rotations, the Dodgers signed pitchers and didn't miss. Right,
mm-hmm.
they when they kept Kershaw, they made the right decision to keep Kershaw. They developed him, then they've kept him and paid him big money. They found a creative way to sign Trevor Bauer, so now they've got him at the top of their rotation, and they managed to develop three pitchers who, frankly, are miles ahead of anything the Cubs have developed in pitching since Kyle Hendricks. And I'll give the Cubs partial credit for developing Kyle Hendricks because he came to them when he was in the mid-minors, you know?
Right. He was still in single-A, and he came from the Rangers, not exactly a noted prospect development powerhouse.
Right. But since then, I mean, nobody mm-hmm. that could compete with those three guys.
And
so the Dodgers have managed to do it both ways.
Yeah, and I mean,
the Cubs just had to keep counting on buying and buying, and that runs out eventually.
I mean, there's a little bit of luck, right? I mean, every time a prospect hits, there's a little bit of luck in baseball.
Yep.
There's virtually no sure things. But the Dodgers have gotten a certain amount of luck, obviously, to have three guys who could potentially turn into number one starters.
Right.
Young guys in their rotation. I mean, they're all top tier young pitchers.
Yeah.
But the Dodgers do this all the time. So the Dodgers have been doing this for 50 years. At some point, someone should be looking at them and saying, how are they doing this?
Right.
What are they seeing that we're not seeing? But, you know, I don't think the Dodgers are letting people know what their secrets are. Obvious reasons. So.
No, and I mean, you and I have long been infuriated by the Cardinals
mm-hmm.
because it seems like the Cardinals, every time they need one, like the right prospect just pops up. And every time they acquire somebody, that guy finishes turning into a near Hall of Fame,
mm-hmm.
right? But it's much, I mean, it's even more so with the Dodgers.
Yeah.
You just, like we just said, all the talent you're talking about. You know, when you go to the position players. You know, you've got Corey Seager, you've got Cody Bellinger, and then you grab guys like Max Muncy, who was floating around other teams, or Justin Turner,
mm-hmm.
and suddenly those guys are monsters.
Yeah, they were not in demand when the Dodgers picked them up.
Nope.
So there's. It's the Dodgers are an organization that you hate because they're so much better than your organization.
Yeah. So here's another question. So we covered that then, that the Yankees made the playoffs seven times, the Dodgers made the playoffs seven times. And again, the Cubs made the playoffs four times. And they were garbage for the first half of the decade. That's no disrespect to, I don't even remember any of those guys. Mike Olt. No disrespect to Mike Olt, but they were garbage for the first mm-hmm. half of the decade.
Oh, yeah.
But the other 4 years, really every one of those years they competed. They won a World Series one of those times. It's just that they didn't do the things to make it more likely that they would compete. They didn't do the, you know, and that's, I mean, it is kind of a crapshoot. So that's why I'm saying, yeah, the Dodgers won last year, but I'm counting 2010 to 2019. The Dodgers made seven playoffs and didn't win any of them. That's the really ridiculous thing. I mean, that's the system that baseball is now. Right. I don't love it. So, but let's flip this over. So here's a really weird thing. 30 teams. In that 10 years, 26 teams made the playoffs.
You're not counting 2020?
Not counting 2020, from 2010 to 2019. So 26 teams made the playoffs. And here's the, you ready for this?
Yeah.
25 of those 26 made it more than once.
So who are the four teams that didn't make the playoffs?
First of all, let me see if you can guess the team that only made it one time. They were handicapped because they only had Mike Trout.
Oh, the Angels. Okay.
Speaking of organizations not doing it right.
Oh, jeez.
You started with Mike Trout, and you can only get to the playoffs once.
Yeah. Just. Yeah, okay. So the four teams that didn't make it.
That's like being born on third base with nobody out and hitting into a triple play somehow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so who are the four teams that did not make the playoffs between 2010 and 2019?
Seattle Mariners.
Two of them are American League teams. That's one of them.
So the Chicago White Sox.
That's the other American
League
team.
That's why I asked if you weren't counting 2020.
Right.
So the American League teams are the White Sox and Mariners.
Yep.
The National League teams are... Pirates? No, though, because the Pirates were in the. They count the play-in game, like when the Pirates played the.
Not only do they count the play-in game,
they were an actual wild card game. Yeah, yeah.
Pirates made it three times.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know why I thought that. The Reds.
Reds made it three times.
Really?
Yeah.
I missed that. Where was I?
A lot of that was early in the decade when. You had just given up on baseball by like June.
Right. Fair point. I'd seen all the David DeJesus I could handle.
And more.
Seems like a really nice guy, but, you know.
Sure does.
I had no beef with him.
I hope he's enjoying whatever life he has now.
He's a beautiful man.
Yeah, he's very handsome.
So.
Okay.
Okay.
So one of them is a team that you, when you think about it, you go, well, yeah, sure, of course it's them.
Unless you can't remember who they are. I feel like
think
now...
Teams that are historically run like garbage.
Well, the Cubs, but I mean, we already established that.
All right. If you get this right, I'll send you a gift basket.
Oh, the Marlins.
Yeah, there
you
go.
Thank you, Jeter. Thank you for that. Marlins, the most just inexplicable franchise in baseball, right?
See what I'm saying, though? My hint was right, right?
The Marlins, we don't make the playoffs, but if we do, we just go ahead and win the World Series.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And the other team was...
By the way, can I also say this about the Marlins, as long as we're ranting about the Marlins for a minute?
Yeah.
I actually... I haven't been there, but I actually appreciate that when they built a new stadium, they took a big swing and made something modern, not retro.
Oh, yeah.
And then Jeter comes in, and the first thing he does is he takes away the home run celebration statue.
They put it out in front, didn't they?
Yeah.
Which is stupid.
But they took it out of the ballpark so they could just have, I think it's more seats or just... blank space.
Yeah, I mean, did they remove like the nightclub and the like the bobblehead?
No, I think Jeter uses that.
Well, touche. But like,
Jeter's like nightclub. I get that, but get rid of that statue.
Like they, I mean, like they had a bobblehead museum. I think.
Yeah.
You know, it suited Miami. And it suited a team that perhaps wasn't always going to be great, that you provided other forms of entertainment there. But see, now I'm looking at these other teams.
So one of the here's
is this last one going to surprise you? Want a hint? Yeah.
Well, here's why it's going to surprise you. It's going to surprise you because their current state of being, even only 2 years removed from the decade I'm talking about, is so different that it's hard to imagine that they were a non-factor for 10 years.
You're talking about the Braves then, right?
No.
Mm.
It's a team that Padres. Has... Yes, there you go.
Yes.
I mean, you look at the Padres right now, and you're like, that team didn't make it for 10 years, but, you know, they made it last year. And it looks like they're going to make it for a while.
Yeah, although they're still having a little bit of trouble clicking here.
Well, yeah.
They're in a tough division,
although they took
though.
They took three out of four from the Dodgers this weekend.
Yeah, well, you think about the fact there's only two games above 500 after taking three out of four from the Dodgers. So
yeah,
maybe now they're starting to put it together. But
yeah, and Tatis was out for a little
similarly, while. Similarly, the Braves were expected to be much better than this starting last year and such, and they're kind of having a little bit of trouble putting it together. They should perhaps trade us all of their best pitching prospects for Chris Bryant. Or we should just pay Chris Bryant because he's one of the best players in the National League.
Yes.
Either way.
How about this? How about if we get them to trade all their pitching prospects for Chris Bryant and then give Chris Bryant all the money in the offseason to come back?
That sounds fair. Sounds fair.
Okay. That's a plan. You want to send that to Jed or shall I send that to Jed?
Oh, he'll hear.
Okay. I forgot. Jed listens to the podcast. How you doing, Jed?
And he doesn't answer
but
that.
You know why Jed listens? It's not for the baseball talk. It's for the food references.
Yeah, this is, I think, where Jed kind of gets away
comes
from baseball.
Comes for ramen talk.
Tries to flesh out his understanding of culture
That's
and
it.
Such. So
yeah.
So we've touched on the baseball pretty heavily here.
Yeah.
Do we want to take a little break and then transition into our next fun stage?
Let's do that. All right. We'll be right back.
In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Live from the studios in Aurora and Santa Cruz, we return to Sons of the Double Cheeseburger with your hosts.
Already in progress.
Brandon Woosley and Kevin Woosley. All right.
Oh, so good to be back.
Yes.
Ooh. Yeah. All right. So what we wanted to do for the second part here today is we're going to pull out something that we did recently. We talked about...
Keep going.
I started that out. I made it sound like a bad art project. Anyway, what we in a recent episode, looked at some baseball cards from the 1984 mm-hmm. season. And we wanted to keep doing some more of that because that was fun.
Yeah.
We hope you enjoyed it. We did. And we're really doing this for us, not you. So, there we go.
I never noticed that on the back of the pack of cards. This is 1987. Did you say that already?
Yeah. Okay. I did not say that.
1987, Tops, Major League Baseball, the real one. Win a trip to 1988 spring training. That would have been exciting. I never noticed that the cards had the gum ingredients on the back. You got dextrose, corn syrup, gum-based softeners, artificial flavors, coloring, and mercury to maintain freshness. No, just kidding. BHT, which probably is just as bad.
I gotta tell you, I mean, I don't know how long it maintained the freshness. I do know not till now. So,
all right, I'm opening my pack.
All right, so we're gonna do this the same way. We're gonna like take one card at a time, war style.
Yeah, but dude, people didn't actually hear that the first time, right?
No, they didn't. So,
same way as what
that's right,
because
that was the lost episode.
About.
That's
right.
The famous lost episode that that our recording devices didn't work. So what we're going to do is we each have packs. We each have two packs. And we're going to flip one card at a time and see what thoughts we have about each of them and see which card was the better card. So...
Okay, so I have the insert.
Because we had to make it into a competition. We're brothers.
Ooh, special offer. Sets of 10 glossy baseball cards.
Nice. So how many cards are in the pack for these?
Oh, jeez. 17.
All right.
What an interesting number to choose.
Yeah, that's natural.
I guess they couldn't go with halves.
You know what it was? It was to celebrate. It was their secret homage to Mark Grace.
Oh, yeah. All those All right. should be secret. All right. All right, so...
The other secret homage to Mark Grace was that the gum had beer as one of the ingredients.
Right. Cigarettes. One of the not-so-secret homages to Mark Grace is misogyny.
That's right. There's little misogynistic comments on the back of every card.
All right, so up first, I have a... Speaking of a team that we were just talking about, from the Padres, player I've never heard of, Gene Walter.
Gene Walter. I've also never heard of Gene Walter. Let me even guess what position he played, because I've never heard of him. Pitcher.
That is correct. Yeah, that's your highest likelihood is pitcher, right?
Yeah.
Because you have more often than not, you have pitchers come up for that cup of coffee, even more so than position players.
Well, plus pitchers make up 40% to 50% of the roster.
Right.
So
Gene Walter attended Eastern Kentucky University. That's right. Probably the best thing we're going to see.
Best we could say about him. All right, I got my card is the 1986 or 87 Cubs team leaders.
That's better. Who were they?
Well, on the card is a picture of the backsides of Ron Say and Steve Trout.
Their butts?
Well, the whole back of their body. Like they're standing on the field talking to each other, and we're seeing their backs so that we can see the names Say and Trout.
Mm. Seems like
I'm assuming that that's also because if you were just looking at Ron Say and Steve Trout face to face, you'd be like, whom? Possibly. Now, here's what's great about that. Say and Trout are on the cover, or on the front. On the back side, I'm going to read you team leaders. I'm just going to scroll through really quickly. Team leader in runs, Keith Moreland.
Mm-hmm.
Hits, Ryan Sandberg. Doubles, Sean Dunstan. Triples, Leon Durham. Home runs, Jody Davis and Gary Matthews. RBIs, Keith Moreland. Stolen bases, Ryan Sandberg. Batting average, Ryan Sandberg. You notice what player I didn't mention? Ron Say.
That's a great point.
Didn't lead the team in anything. He's on the front of the card. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different position players who led the team in something. One of the two starters who didn't lead the team in anything is on the front of the card. Okay, let's go to pitching. See if you pick up the theme now. Games, Lee Smith. Innings, Dennis Eckersley. Wins, Scott Sanderson and Lee Smith. It's always bad when your closer ties for the team lead and wins, by the way.
Yep.
Always bad. Team lead, would you like to guess how many wins Sanderson and Lee Smith each had in 1986?
Nine.
This was a dark time to be a Cub fan.
Was it nine?
It was nine.
That's a pretty good guess.
Strikeouts, Dennis Eckersley. Complete games, Rick Sutcliffe. Saves, Lee Smith. Earned run average, Scott Sanderson. Once again, no Steve Trout. So, to celebrate the 1986 Cubs, a hot garbage team, they put on the team leader's card two guys who didn't lead the team in anything. That is perfectly evocative of the Cubs. And I'm going to say that I think that means Gene Walter actually wins this round.
Do you think that really?
I really do.
Well, so, you want to know what, okay, well, that's we want to move through this quicker, right? So let's, you want to hear what Gene Walter's numbers were?
Sure, but I still think he wins.
Okay, 57 games, 98 innings pitched. He was 2-2 with an ERA of 3.86 with one save.
He wins.
I don't know what 3.86, you know, for that era, how that kind of...
The Cubs team leader was Scott Sanderson with a 4.19.
So Gene Walter was actually a pretty serviceable middle reliever.
Yeah.
All right, I'll take the
Possibly
win.
Would have been our best relief pitcher that year.
Well,
okay, so that's one for Kevin.
Lee
Although Lee Smith's ERA apparently was higher than 4.19.
But maybe he didn't have enough innings.
Oh, that's true. Okay, fair enough.
All right, so next, why don't you go Lee first Smith. Next?
Next is, this is Powerhouse. Okay, I've also never heard of this guy. What I can tell you is he has really 1986 hair. And he's a Milwaukee Brewer pitcher John Henry Johnson.
Yeah. Well, we'll have heard of this next guy at least. So finally, we'll have someone we've heard of. Dodger, longtime Dodger, Ken Landreau.
Yeah. Ken Landreau wins this round. That's great. I like him.
Yeah,
was he an Oriole too?
If he was, it was after that. Angels for 2 years, Twins for 2 years. At this point,
that's what I'm Dodgers thinking of. I'm thinking of Angels and Twins. Okay.
And he was a starter, and I'm guessing he was hurt a little bit in 86.
But
I mean, he, for the era, I think he was probably adequate.
Oh yeah, he was a solid starter. Okay, would you like to know just really quick, because Ken Landreau wins that round. But can I tell you the pivotal fact on the back of John Henry Johnson's card?
Sure.
John Henry participated in Little League ball.
That's it, huh?
This is the saddest baseball card I have. he's got big 86 hair. The look on his face looks like, what? Wait, did you just take my picture?
All right, you're gonna have to send me that picture so I can post it.
I mean,
it would have been a sadder card if, like, he had a booger on his face and on the back it said, "This guy's a dick." I mean, right? Not even any stats. Just this guy's a tool.
If on the back of his card it says, "John Henry Johnson's a jerk. Look, we took a picture with a booger on his face."
F this guy.
Yes. That would have been worse. That card doesn't exist. But this does, and it's not good.
That card would be worth like $1 million, though.
This absolutely.
Project 70 the Tops is doing, they need to do a card like that. All right, I'm going to step away for like 2 seconds because I need a little more light in this part of the room where I'm at. You may hear more chickens. Hold on. Chickens! I don't want to live without you.
No. I gotta tell you, I didn't hear a peep out of him.
That was terrible, but I like it.
It was. Okay, let's keep going.
All right, so I'm 2-0.
Yes.
Well, next one, I figure I gotta win. It's a future stars card.
Uh-huh.
Bo Jackson.
Oh, wow. Dude, that's awesome.
And Bo Jackson did not have the longest or most distinguished career, but probably one of the coolest guys to play baseball in the last 30, 40 years, I guess, just based on his pure talent alone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Bo Jackson.
Yeah. Oh, you're definitely winning. Although what I have is a victory of its own. It's Astros pitcher Aurelio Lopez.
Ooh.
Sporting the built like Brandon body on the mound.
Oh, those were the days.
Man. Hey, listen, Willens' studio is still in baseball, so those days aren't over.
Yeah, we've talked about this. We'll talk someday about our love for beefy catchers.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, I'm up next. I've got, he's got a very, very large mitt, like an abnormally large mitt that I don't think is a gimmick. He's Rangers pitcher Mike Mason.
Well,
I'm not sure I'm going to win any cards this time.
Well, I have. Well, what distinguishes him? Look at the back of the card.
Well, it wasn't his pitching. He was a starter for the Rangers, and consistently lost more than he won. Struck out not many batters. The card says Mike played baseball, hockey, soccer, and football in high school. He and his wife have a son, Derek.
All right.
So all of his professional highlights have to do with other than his professional life. Okay.
So I have.
I'm just chalking you down. I'm just putting down the win for you right now.
No, you don't. I mean, okay, I have Cardinals catcher Steve Lake. He was traded to the Cardinals from the Cubs during that 86 season. So Steve Lake had spent the previous 3.5 years with the Cubs as a backup catcher. Was traded to the Cardinals. And that's about it. I mean, there's not much more to say about Steve Lake as a player.
Well, then I guess the fact that Mike Mason was actually in the starting rotation and Steve Lake was a backup, maybe Mike Mason wins.
Yeah, I mean, you remember Steve Lake.
Oh, I love Steve Lake.
But I don't know that Steve Lake brought a whole lot extra to the table.
No. But these are two guys that are, we mostly remember them because we're holding their cards right now. If you flip their names and said, there's Mike Lake and Steve Mason, you'd have been like, okay, sure. All right.
Next up.
I'm up next. Now I'm going to be on a winning streak, I'm pretty sure, because I have Barry Bonds' rookie card.
Oh, ding dong. You have all of the luck with this stuff.
Barry Bonds, looking slender, as he did not look later in life, having hit 223 as a rookie. But even then, he knew how to draw a walk. Okay, Barry Bonds, what do you got?
Well, you absolutely win. I have Rick Sutcliffe of the Cubs.
Rick Sutcliffe is pretty good.
But this was by far his worst season with the team. He was 5-14 with a 4.64 ERA.
Wow. Yeah.
He had some control issues.
Sure.
Yeah, and he had some not striking out guys issues. And he had issues.
But see, I rated on the whole totality of the card.
Okay.
I would say most rounds Rick Sutcliffe would win.
Rick Sutcliffe you're seeing a profile of him. Got the big beard, the big shell of hair there. He's wearing that Cubs blue road uniform from that era, the pullover.
Okay.
It's a good-looking card, but nice. You don't beat Barry Bonds' rookie card. Unless somehow you had, like, a Mickey Mantle or if somehow you had a card from another era in there, but that's about as good a card as
you're going to get.
Slipped
in a Mickey Mantle, like, hey, remember me? Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
About the best card you could get from this year that we're looking at. So,
basically, certainly the greatest, not that year, but the greatest player in that card set.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So next, I have the 1986 Detroit Tigers team leaders.
Ooh.
Lots of Alan Trammell, lots of Jack.
Yeah.
Lewis. Yeah.
Couple of Hall of Famers there.
Yeah. And some Kirk Gibson. And a smattering of Willie Hernandez. And
love Willie Hernandez.
And then a little Darrell Evans and Darnell Coles just to round things out.
That's a lot of good on that card.
Yeah. Darrell Evans was the home run leader of that team.
Darrell Evans is one of those guys who has a better case for Hall of Fame than you might think.
He's like a Rusty Staub sort of guy too, isn't he?
He is.
Yeah. Well, so what do you got?
Well, I got Paul Molitor.
That probably beats this.
I got another Hall of Famer. Look at that. Paul Molitor on the Brewers, and, well, he's about 10 years into his career at that point.
Yep.
I don't think at this point it was obvious that he was going to be a Hall of Famer, but because he had a lot of injuries early in his career. But then he got healthy, and he looked strong.
Yeah, he was still considered an excellent player at that point.
Yes.
All right, so you're up next.
I'm up next. We're tied 3-3, by the way.
All right.
Oh, next I have... this is insane. This is my third Hall of Famer in a row. I have a Tony Gwynn All-Star card.
All right, well, I have a player who is not a bad player. And he started his career with the Cubs, spent his first 3.5 years with the Cubs. Another player of, who probably would have been useful to the team, but they got rid of him probably because he wanted more than a sack of peanuts as a salary. Andre Thornton.
Oh yes, Andre Thornton. I remember him.
I mean, in the mid to late 70s, we could have used him as a first baseman, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we could have still used Bill Madlock at the time, and you know, a number of other guys. Almost, you could say you could put together a pretty good team that way.
You could. But Cubs had a pretty good team in the late 70s, just never a really good team.
Well, imagine if they'd had Bill Madlock and Andre Thornton and whoever.
That would have been nice.
So you win that round as well. And that's, I do. I've had two pretty good cards that you've bested with even Hall of better, Famers. So
that's kind of shocking.
That's a rough.
I'm counting Barry Bonds to Hall of Famer, by the way, because, you know, I'm not a petty baseball.
Because
the
Hall of Fame
writer.
Is just a, anyway. All right, I will go next. I think I've got this one.
Okay.
I have the Roger Clemens 1986 record breaker for most strikeouts in a 9-inning game when he struck out 20 on April 29th, 1986. So that was the first time then, I think, that he struck out 20.
Yeah.
So that was the first time anyone had struck out 20 in
Correct.
A major league game. That's a pretty good card. In fact, this is card number one.
Oh, wow.
Series.
Oh, okay. This is funny then. This is really funny. I have card number two.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding you. Card number two is also a 1986 record breaker. You're still going to win this round.
Oh, boy.
1986 record breaker, Jim Deshays, most consecutive strikeouts at the start of a game.
Oh.
On September 23rd, 1986, Jim Deshays struck out the first eight batters of the game. So Jim Deshays, so that is really funny to me that we would both get a record breaker. And, of course, we love Jim Deshays as an announcer for the Cubs.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Roger Clemens, that's an awesome card. Nice. So you win that one. We're all right.
Tied up at four.
We are tied at four, and nothing breaks a tie like Dodgers pitcher Ken Howell.
Oh.
You might be saying, who's Ken Howell?
No, I remember Howell, but I don't. I think he's the sort of guy that was never as good as he could have been or should have been.
I don't know if you do remember Ken Howell, because I thought I remembered Ken Howell, but I think I was thinking of a different Howell, because the Howell I was thinking of
Thurston?
Was as white as Thurston Howell, and Ken Howell is not.
Oh, well, then I am thinking of someone different.
See? He's a good-looking man, but yeah, not just a relief pitcher. He lists music and cars among his hobbies.
Oh.
Which is one of those things. I love when they say things like that, music and cars. So
he drives music, and turns on the radio?
Music is the most universal thing other than breathing. So music's a hobby, okay.
He doesn't take the bus, and he doesn't sit in silence when he's driving.
This is suggesting Ken Howell is not an exciting dude.
I bet he is. I bet if we gave him a call right now, we'd be interrupting him doing something fascinating.
Well, when we do our own wax pack thing and we travel all over to meet all these guys, we're going to find out. We'll ride in a car with Ken Howell, listen to music, and find out how exciting he is.
That'd be great if he said, you know what, they put that down there, and it couldn't have been further from the truth. I was just joking around. I love walking in silence. This is
I'm strictly a spoken word guy, and I ride a scooter everywhere.
That's my jam. All right, so you had Ken Howell. I have the what I believe would actually be his rookie card, Mike Bielecki of the Pirates.
Wow.
Who later became a serviceable pitcher for a couple of years for the Cubs in the late 80s, right?
Mike Bielecki had a solid career. I think Mike Bielecki wins that round,
and
especially since we didn't remember which Howell was Ken Howell.
And he's wearing the Pirates hat, the flat top hat with the piping all around.
It's a good hat.
And what I liked about those hats, too, is when they would sometimes get a star on there.
Yeah. They did that in the late 70s, especially. And I think they kept doing it in the 80s, right?
They may have. I bought one of those, that style Pirates hats, when we went to a Cubs game one time.
Yeah,
just because it was so cool.
Yeah, it's a very cool hat.
All right, great. All right, I've taken the lead. Right.
You have.
Now, and I'm up. I'll kick us off here the next at bat. I have Toronto Blue Jay, Lloyd Mosby.
Wow, Lloyd Mosby. That guy had a hose.
See what it says in the back. Lloyd and his wife are parents of two children. It says nothing about his hose.
Is this the worst year for comments or what?
And then do all He's of yours terrible. Also have some comment about some player from the
distance? Another past? Player, yeah. They all it's like on some random date in history. I love how it says on this date. And then it gives you some random date in history. It's not the date I'm opening the card.
Exactly. Why is it on this? What I mean, unless that date corresponds to like a birth date or something, which it does not.
Nope.
It's just they picked a day and it's on this date.
That's, on a date, here's Tops. A thing that happened in baseball.
Oh, Tops.
I don't know who the intern was at Tops this year, but they were mailing it in.
So Lloyd Mosby led the league in triples one year.
Wow.
15, that's no small feat.
No, it's not.
So Lloyd Mosby was also a serviceable starting outfielder for a goodly number of years up until this point as well. So, all right, so who you got?
Yeah, I think you're going to win this round. I got Ron Washington for the Twins.
Wash.
Wash is cool. Wash is a cool dude.
He is about as beloved a coach as there is in baseball at this point.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. And this is a pretty cool card. In that the Twins are wearing their mid-80s powder blue road uniform.
Oh.
And it's got the logo that is the state of Minnesota.
Uh-huh. The river?
With the baseball on it.
Oh.
And then the two guys shaking hands, and it says, Win Twins.
That's a great logo.
It's a pretty great logo. But yeah, but I think Mike Bielecki's better player.
Lloyd Mosby, you mean?
Yes, Lloyd Mosby.
Well, did Wash, was he ever a kind of a starter, full time starter, or was he just kind of a journeyman?
He had one year that he got as many as 120 games played, like 450 at bats. So no, never really got a full season in.
I'll take the W there then.
Yeah. By the way, I hadn't noticed this previously, but this was still the era where they were trying to make game-winning RBI a thing.
Yes. Lloyd Mosby had 51 career game-winning RBIs up until that point.
Well, Wash had 14. So obviously, if we're not sure who breaks the tie, I think that helped it. You know,
Ken Landreau had 53. Now I've got to look. Mm. Not really. All right. So are you ready? You want to get you going to kick off the next bat? All right.
I've got... I've got Boston Red Sox, and I believe his position is unibrow wearer, Sammy Stewart.
I've never heard of Sammy Stewart.
Sammy Stewart was a pitcher for the Orioles for a long time, mostly reliever. And he was in that era where a reliever would throw like 120 to 140 innings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so most of his career with the Orioles, he went to the Red Sox in 86 to not win a World Series. Sorry, Red Sox fans, if that hurt.
Yeah. That is sick burn!
It is.
I've tried
and he's got a big old stash and a giant unibrow.
Well, stash helps. That adds some swag to his card, so...
Indeed.
I have a perpetual underperformer, Cincinnati Red outfielder, Cal Daniels.
Oh.
He was one of those guys that had some kind of freakish tools a little bit, right? He should have been super smooth, and he should have been something. This is rookie card. And he had a really good rookie season. He played about half the year. He hit .320 with a .519 slugging percentage and walked a fair amount. So he probably had quite the OPS for that era. So, Cal Daniels, rookie.
Well, that is a tough call because Sammy Stewart was like an anchor middle reliever.
Oh,
like
so...
good numbers.
Well, we should compare game winning RBIs then. Oh, he won't have any. Oh, no.
Okay, so
but Cal Daniels will have no saves, so this is going to be an issue.
Let's decide it this way. Who had the greater on this date?
That's what I was thinking myself. All right, you go first.
On this date, August 12th, 1974, Ellie Rodriguez recorded 19 putouts as catcher in a 9-inning game for Angels.
That's not even that.
Ellie's 1974 card was number 405.
That's not a great one. That one's
one of the least impressive facts.
That's pretty weak.
All apologies to Ellie Rodriguez, who's probably in his 70s now.
I mean, 19 putouts isn't so bad because you got to figure most of your putouts come from strikeouts as a catcher, right?
That probably just means he caught for Nolan Ryan.
I get it, right? But
that literally is just Nolan Ryan's catcher on this day.
I don't want to hurt his feelings. Ellie Rodriguez. I mean, it's not his fault. So no. Mine is April 8th, 1982, almost on this date. Buddy Bell hit 2 home runs on opening day. Buddy's 1982 Topps card was number 50. So I don't
care. That's clearly better. You've won that round. I'm bitter.
The Cal Daniels card is nice, too. I'm
bitter because I got stuck with Nolan Ryan's catcher.
The Cal Daniels card is nice, too, because he's just finished his swing. He's like getting ready to set down the bat. He's kind of got his body turned to run. He's a lefty, so. And then you see, like, the dirt kicking up where he's, like, you know, starting to take off out of the batter's box. Uh-huh. It's a nice action card.
By the way, I would like to just say I absolutely called that. I just looked it up. August 12th, 1974, Nolan Ryan threw a 9-inning start against the – what in the – what? Wow. Okay. Pitched 9 innings, struck out 19 batters.
Wow.
Yeah.
So he
Starts later, he struck out 19 batters again.
It took Roger Clemens to get to that 20, as we know from
It's true.
What we've seen today.
It was one of six complete. It was one of six complete games Nolan Ryan threw in the month of August.
Yeah, so you may recall I sent you a text. I picked up these comic books from the 90s that were like biographies of players. One was Ken Griffey. One was Nolan Ryan. These are about as factual as, I don't know, a Newsmax story or something, but as factual as Donald Trump's hair. But I did completely lose my train of thought right now. But yeah, so the Nolan Ryan was quite a workhorse, which I knew that already, but they really seem to highlight the fact that he was very angry with the Astros or the Rangers that he played with first?
He played with the Mets first.
No, but after of the two Texas then teams, friend, in the chronology. We know it was the Mets and then the Angels, and then was it the Astros?
Oh, I see. Then he went to the Astros.
Right. So then the Astros figured he had nothing left in the tank, so then he went to Texas and continued to finish up.
Have something in the tank, right. Yes.
But they really kept highlighting the fact how angry he was with the Astros. So
that's good. Good. Glad he got over that. By the way, in the month of 1974, in four consecutive
In the month of 1974?
In the month of 1974. Okay.
In the week
in the
of
year
2020.
Of 1974, in the months of June, July, August, and September, each of those months, Nolan Ryan had a start in which he pitched at least 10 innings.
Yeah, that's nuts.
That doesn't happen.
Take a break, Nolan.
Yeah.
Give someone else a chance.
Exactly. Okay.
All right, so
you've taken a commanding lead. You're ahead 7-4. We only got 6 cards left. I got to turn it around fast.
I think you're going to. Am I
first or are you first?
I'm first this time.
Okay.
All right. I have another guy who started out with the Cubs, but Padre Carmelo Martinez.
Nice.
I like Carmelo Martinez. I was really disappointed when the Cubs traded him.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to do something for us. And
all right. Anyway. Well, I have another rookie card. It's another Bay Area player.
Ooh.
It's A's pitcher Bill Mooneyham.
You let the wind out of that one there, buddy.
I tried to build it up as much as I could. Carmelo Martinez for the win.
Well, what did he do there? I mean, we know he didn't do much after that because, but how was his rookie year?
Well, he pitched 99 innings in 45 games and had a 4.52 ERA.
So he had 99 innings, but a win ain't one.
No, no.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'll take that with Carmelo.
Struck out 75 batters, walked 67 batters in 99 innings.
Yeah, it's not the greatest. So what does his card look like? How does the card look?
Well, he's wearing the A's jersey that is green with a very large old-fashioned A on it.
I like it.
Like the A's thing is like three times bigger than you remember it being.
Mm.
It covers almost all of his chest.
That must have been a spring training picture.
He's wearing the sleeves of that jersey have stripes of yellow and green.
What the hell?
And then he's wearing a yellow sleeved undershirt.
All right, see, I'm gonna need to see a picture of this too, because that sounds nothing like any A's uniform. It sounds like some sort of weird Nagel version of an A's uniform.
No, it looks, I'm not describing it well, but it looks like a completely 1980s uniform. And he looks like he's like 14.
Well, that's a wrinkle.
Although, he's not. He was at that point 26.
Well, at least he has the look of youth going for him.
Sure did.
So this Carmelo Martinez card, he's in the batter's box prepping his bats. The more unusual type of shot. It's that Padres uniform from that era with the RAK on the sleeve.
Celebrating for Ray Kroc. Ray Kroc.
Ray a Kroc.
Ray Kroc's brother Roy.
What time is it? It's Ray a Kroc.
Oh no.
That's not, no, it's not meant to sound like I'm like an accent or anything.
We better keep moving.
So why don't you go first here?
Okay.
What you got for me? Better up.
I've got forgettable Angels pitcher Gary Lucas.
Yes, very forgettable.
Gary and his wife are parents of two daughters.
Oh. Well, that's nice. So I have somebody who is not necessarily any more distinguished.
Okay.
This is one of these more unusual things. I have Orioles pitcher Nate Snell. His card lists, okay, you know, like you have a player who played for a very long time, and it's like super tiny print to fit all of his seasons in, right?
Right.
They've done that here, but only two of those seasons were at the major league level.
Oh,
so they accommodated all of these seasons, minor league seasons, by doing the hyper small print, which is, I don't remember that being entirely all that common, so...
No.
His hobbies are horseback riding and tennis. Sees all like baseball was also maybe just a hobby for him, too. I'm not sure.
It could be.
So,
well,
what do we do here?
We got pitcher versus pitcher, right? Let's see.
I don't have an on this date on this card even.
You don't? Do you have a fun fact about him?
Nate's hobbies are horseback riding and tennis, yeah.
Oh, that's right. Okay, so when did Nate get... So, a lot of minor league seasons. When did he get to the major leagues? How old was he?
So, the first one minor league season listed is 77 in Miami, which is still a fine minor league town. And then 1984 is when he pitched 7 2/3 innings. In 1985, he pitched 100 innings. So, he was a pretty good reliever for him then. And then they sent him back down in 86. I don't know why. He pitched 100 innings with a 2.69 ERA, and you might have thought, well, that should keep a guy in the big leagues, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nope. Sure didn't. Went back down to Rochester. And then he ended up coming back up in 86, and he had a 3.86 ERA. You know, I mean, he was a pretty serviceable reliever, and his baseball card looks like, if anyone sends me back down to the minor leagues, I'm going to throw a punch him.
Well, I got to say, I think Gary Lucas was a comparable major league pitcher to that.
Yeah.
But if Nate Lucas or Nate Snell's got that look like, don't send me back to the minors, then I think we give the win to Nate.
I don't know. Do you have a what's your fun fact?
Besides Gary and his wife are the parents of two daughters.
Oh, right. To have a on this date.
Listen, I think the fact that Nate innovated and got beyond cars and music is pretty great. Tennis and horseback riding are actual hobbies. Cars and music are just essentials of life.
So you're giving,
in America.
You're giving it to Nate Snell?
I'm giving it to Nate Snell.
All right.
It sounds like the system didn't give Nate Snell enough opportunities.
It doesn't. You will not be surprised to learn that he was an African-American pitcher.
There you go.
Which in that era, it's kind of like African-American quarterbacks, right?
Yeah, you can't be a pitcher then, no.
There's a lot of bad race politics in that. All right, so next is Philadelphia Philly. Oh my God, this card. So Rick Shue, really big shoe. That was terrible. Philadelphia Phillies.
Another one of those guys that never quite put it all together.
Right, and he was from Philadelphia, so he was playing for his hometown team, which is nice. What's interesting about his card is that his pant leg is almost completely torn off below the knee.
Okay, I'm going to need to see that. Is he in action, or is that like...
No, he's in action.
Like a posed shot.
No, it's not like he was like attacked by a bear or something in the Phillies clubhouse. But yeah, it's...
Or Mike Schmidt.
Yeah, because he seems positioned a little bit like... He is a third baseman, in fact. So that's a tough break. You're not getting a lot of chances there.
Oh, no, being a third baseman for the Phillies, that's the wrong move at that point. All right.
So I'm sending you the picture of him right now. And you can decide if this is just a slam dunk victory. We haven't even heard who you've got yet. So,
well, I have the guy I've got has got some things going for him.
All right.
He is a black pitcher. Oh. Cecilio Guante.
Oh, my gosh. I remember nothing about him, but I remember that name, and it's a great name.
Yes. He was a reliever, pretty solid reliever, for the Pirates.
Oh, yeah.
Which means he's got that cool Pirates hat.
Yeah, I think he might take the W here. Have you seen the picture of Rick Shue? Rick Shue, he takes the W just based upon Cecilio Guante, just based upon his own merits.
Oh, but that's a good picture of Rick Shue.
It's the Rick Shue card. It's a good card.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the Cecilio Guante takes the win.
Yeah, that's like, wow. His whole knee is coming out there.
Yeah.
He looks like he just got spiked.
And he's wearing actual stirrups.
Yeah.
They're getting saggy.
Because his whole pant leg has been ripped off by a wild animal or something.
Apparently, Philly's...
And he's got the great flip-down sunglasses of that.
Yeah, and he has the mustache there, and he's kind of... He's got his, like, he's doing, like, beaver teeth there.
He's clearly trying to look like Mike Schmidt.
Yeah.
Like,
maybe they'll
forget.
Like, the manager will just say somebody, you look like Mike Schmidt. You must be him. Go.
Get out there. No.
Apparently, it worked at least once. Maybe Mike Schmidt spiked him. I don't know.
That could be. It could be.
But you take that win.
I'll take the win because I think Cecilio Guante is pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so I get to lead it off, and I think my winning streak's coming to an end because I have Angels second baseman Rob Wilfong.
I remember the name. Well, unless I'm remembering Wilfong from something else, but I don't know.
No, probably.
That's true.
Played for the Twins and the Angels. Was a lifetime 249 batter. Had multiple seasons in his career where he batted under 200. and got more than 100 plate appearances.
But you got to keep in mind that where we remember a lot of these names then is from actually looking at the baseball cards during that era. You know, we don't remember a lot of these players from watching them play against the Cubs.
No, no, no. And Rob Wilfong, by the way, on his card, he's mid swing, and he has the powerful physique of Greg Maddux's accountant.
Oh dear.
Not Greg Maddux. I'm assuming Greg Maddux has an accountant who is even less muscular looking than him. And that's Rob Wilfong.
Well, that's sad. That's I'll tell you who I've got. Now batting from the St. Louis Cardinals. Outfielder Willie McGee.
Well, yeah, that's a win right there. I got to tell you, I dislike the Cardinals, but I like Willie McGee.
Oh, and the on this date fact,
yeah,
is a excellent. On this date, August 4th, 1982, Joel Youngblood played with the Mets at Chicago and Expos at Philadelphia.
Oh, that is a good fact.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite historical baseball facts, you know, from the time growing up when Joel Youngblood was traded between games or mid-game and then...
Like, I think it was... Yeah, either at the end of the game and then, yeah.
But then he made his way to Philadelphia post-haste and got in another game.
Yeah, two games in two different cities. That's pretty amazing.
And he collected a hit with both of those teams.
Oh, that's so good. That's a day.
And he was still Rob just Joel Wilfong's. Youngblood for that. I mean, he wasn't like...
He went back to being Joel Youngblood. Right. So Rob Wilfong's fun fact, by the way, is such a cruel, cruel fact. From the Topps people. Keep in mind, Rob Wilfong looks like Greg Maddux's accountant, but he was in his... This card is after he's played 11 major league seasons.
Oh, wow.
Okay? So he's stuck around. His fun fact is, Rob's brother James played pro ball in 1978. What? So in other words, that doesn't say he made the major leagues. At the point that Rob was in season two of his major league career, his brother flamed out. And we're going to talk about that.
Well, that's...
I almost want to give Rob Wilfong the win just because that's so mean. But Willie McGee is the clear winner. What do you got next?
All right. Now batting from the Cincinnati Reds. Utility player Nick Asaski.
Nick Asaski, mostly a first baseman, I think.
Yeah, outfield and first base, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, not particularly well necessarily, although he was largely a starter for the 85 Reds and was serviceable.
Well, but this is interesting. Yeah. I have San Francisco Giants catcher with a look on his face that says, oh, I can't wait until I'm a manager. Bob Melvin.
Oh,
yeah.
I think Bob Melvin takes that win.
I think he does. He was real early in his career, and of course, his career was really just a setup for being a manager. But, all right. And then I'm closing it out. Oh, I just realized something. What? I'm on a run here. I'm on a streak. I had Rob Wilfong, Bob Melvin, and now I got Bob Gritch. I never heard anyone call him Bob Gritch.
No.
This is as weird as the card that says Bob Clemente. I mean, sincerely, I've only heard the man referred to as Bobby Gritch, and on this card, he's Bob.
It's very odd.
And this is 17 years into his career.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I think you're going to win this one. I have Braves pitcher, Gene Garber.
Gene Garber's pretty cool.
And he was.
But Bob Gritch could have been a Hall of Famer.
Yes.
And Bobby Gritch, I think maybe even more so. Tell us something about Gene Garber, because I do remember him.
This was his 19th season.
Wow, he ended with a couple of old dudes.
And he pitched quite well. There's no room for anything about him other than the fact that he was born and continued to reside in Elizabethtown, Pennsylvania.
Nice.
So hometown boy. Good for him. Yeah. I mean, that's about it. Led the league in categories at various times. You know, he was just, I think he was just a good relief pitcher who at this stage had pitched 1,400 innings.
Wow.
Which is probably more, that's more than probably your average starting pitcher. You know, somebody who breaks in as a starting pitcher even ends up throwing in a career.
Yeah. I would agree.
So that's, he put together a real nice career for himself. It took a pretty good card to beat him, I think, with Robert
Grinch. I have to assume this is a typo. This is like an error card that they called him Bob.
I mean, it's not like the card says, you know, Roberto Clemente on it. I mean, I think
his wife calls him Bob.
We have no idea what his wife calls him, but
she calls him Roberto.
So we take this away, a 10-7 victory.
Yeah, me, you won it.
Which, again, this is another one of these situations because in the last episode, you had really better high-end talent than I did. Mm-hmm. And I took home the W, and you had better high-end talent in this pack as well.
Yeah, I mean, I had two guys that are Hall of Famers. Two guys that probably should be Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
And John Henry Johnson.
Well, and you had a really nice record card, like that Jim Deshays card.
Yeah.
8 strikeouts. That's a pretty impressive record. And I would think that would have beat the vast majority of other cards.
Indeed.
It just so happens that I had, you know, that went up against, was that one, did that go directly up against?
That went up against Roger Clemens.
The Roger Clemens one, which, first time in Major League history, someone striking out 20 batters in a game is...
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's...
By the way, I just noticed I'm looking at my Tony Gwynn card.
Yeah.
And Tony Gwynn's hat is so high on his head...
Yeah.
...that I think it might be levitating.
What's my voice?
I'm not sure it's touching his head.
Is he doing, like, one of those tricks where you kind of do the thing where you poke it up in the back and kind of feel it's going up off your head and you know what I'm talking about?
If he is, he's playing it straight.
Well, I think he would have been the sort who would do that. He's dead now, right?
He is dead.
Yes. I think, I just want to make sure, you know, I don't want to assume he's still alive. Or no one likes to have to be told they're alive when they're actually dead.
No.
Like, it's annoying.
No. I do think having the Cubs leaders with a picture of two guys that didn't lead the team in anything, though, that's the most Cub card I could imagine.
Well, I should check this, though, with my Tigers ones. Who was on that? We had Sparky Anderson. Oh, Willie Hernandez did, in fact, lead the team in something. So
there you go.
He's on there. And Sparky Anderson's like got his finger, like his finger wagging at him.
Oh, boy. It's racially insensitive, Sparky.
That could have been his nickname, racially insensitive Sparky. All right, well.
Hey, so we have time for just one more thing today. It's time for, and I haven't created any music for this yet. Maybe I'll try to do that. But it's time for Kevin to give us an overdue record review.
Overdue record review.
That was good. I'll build a song around that.
No, you can build it around something better than that, I would think.
No. It'll be that.
Well, then I'm going to come up with a better song. All right, so your overdue record review was Chicago. And really...
Yeah, did you listen?
I listened to... You know what? I only listened to the... I've only listened so far to the first side of one of the albums. I've not gotten to then where he goes Guitar Madness. So... but mine is... Okay, so there was a band that was not necessarily... I think it was a band that was well-regarded in the 90s during that, I don't know, you'd call that grunge kind of rock renaissance period of the mid to late 90s, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were a band that kind of was at the tail end of their career, as it turned out then. A band by the name of Screaming Trees from the Seattle area, from Washington. Ellensburg, right. I think, more specifically, but they got lumped into the Seattle thing. They may have ended up in Seattle, I guess. But and they had an album entitled Sweet Oblivion, which yep. I think was a minor hit, had a couple of really well-regarded songs, and they put some songs on some of the soundtracks from that era, like the single soundtrack, and then they had one more album after that called Dust a few years later, and then they okay. were done. But prior to kind of having hit it big, they had already had 5 full-length records.
Nice.
And I remember at the time, I really enjoy Screaming Trees. I still do enjoy Screaming Trees quite a bit. But I have never listened to any of their albums prior to Sweet Oblivion, for some reason.
Right.
And that surprises me, because I enjoyed Sweet Oblivion plenty enough that you would think that would have been my next step. And I'm guessing I ran up against some roadblocks in terms of actually finding the recordings, because
mm-hmm.
they were on SST Records, a small label, and that's a West Coast label, and did not necessarily get tremendous distribution then in these parts. And I remember reading once in an interview or something where they talked about how Screaming Trees had started off as like almost like a psychedelic rock band, and I was like, what? Because that just didn't really track with then what I knew of them. Right. So I listened to all of their earlier records, but I started with, at the beginning, with Clairvoyance, which was their first record that they recorded in 1986.
Okay.
And they recorded records, basically, those first 5 were put out over a 6-year period.
Mm-hmm.
So I listened to Clairvoyance, and indeed, that was some trippy psychedelic rock. It was still,
wow.
You could tell the Screaming Trees element, kind of this this earthier sort of hard rock vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And Screaming Trees is well known. Mark Lanegan is kind of the takeaway from Screaming Trees, who's gone on to be, I think, in like Queens of the Stone Age. He's kind of appeared in some other like kind of supergroup sort of bands, and he has a large catalog of kind of solo, I wouldn't call it singer-songwriter type stuff, but kind of, I don't think it's like folk music, it's not roots music, but it's kind of that American, traditional American music sort of style, but done in his very distinct voice. He has this gravelly... Yeah,
great gravelly voice.
Really sonorous, deep-toned, gravelly voice. And he's done a lot of them collaborating with other people, female singers, and, you know, to great effect. And he's really built a career completely separate from the Screaming Trees work in that regard. And in this Clairvoyance record, it is... You know, you kind of get those base elements of what you would know the band to be, but it is absolutely something completely different. And it was interesting then to see as they kind of progress. I listened through to like the next record, Even If and Especially When, and you had Invisible Lantern, and you had Buzz Factory, and then Uncle Anesthesia. By the time like you got to Invisible Lantern, kind of the psychedelic stuff had largely gone away.
Okay.
And it just kind of continued though, but then So it got a little harder edge, and then it kind of mellowed into what Sweet Oblivion was. You know, because sure. Sweet Oblivion, it's definitely very guitar and drums-oriented record, and it's pretty hard-driving. It doesn't have... It's not like an edgy-sounding record. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
It's just I don't know that I have the right word to describe it, but... you know what it is.
It actually, it's not that up-tempo. I mean, a lot of it is right. Sort of like mid-tempo stuff. And again, clearly driven by the guitar and by that really amazing voice. But other than like their big hit, I Nearly Lost You, it's not like it's not really like propulsive.
Right. Yeah, there's like meandering elements. It builds to some heavier spots and it's more like storytelling in both the music and the lyric. So, I quite enjoyed it. And so, nice. This was the sort of band that I realized, you know, what I learned to like about them was, you know, a lot of bands, you kind of pick them up early.
Yep.
And you see this progression. Like, so like if you were a fan of U2 early on, mm-hmm. you'd know a much different band than if you were a person who, you know, around 2000, 2005 or whatever, said, I'm going to listen to the albums this U2 band is putting out from now on. It's a completely different band. But I'm used to kind of starting at that early end and seeing how the bands progress and kind of seeing as a band gets older, maybe they kind of mellow out some. And I don't know that that's, so it was interesting kind of tracking it backwards instead. And I don't know that I would say that they mellowed out. I just think they kind of, I think matured is almost the right word for it. Not in the sense that they were immature, but they settled into a very, I should have better words.
Well, I want to say like they settled into a groove kind of, right?
Right.
Because they did, they really had a nice, clean, like it was a good tempo. It was a good feel.
But there was also, they were comfortable. They had a gravitas and there was a certain comfort to who they were as a band.
Yeah.
You know, there was not, in their playing, there did not seem to be any reticence to kind of do things a bit differently than what everyone else was doing. You know, the community that they were a part of was more, I think, geography or friendships or whatever than it was mimicking or kind of finding a common musical style.
Right. That makes sense. What was the name of the first album again?
First album's called Clairvoyance.
Clairvoyance. All right.
Yes.
I got to check that out.
Yeah.
Nice. Excellent. Well, good call. That's a good choice. All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up here because I don't know how much, you know, your chicks have been peeping in the background, although I haven't heard much of that. I don't know how much everyone has heard my son in the background who is not having it today. So
he's like our Snell friend, right?
Yeah, he is. I can only think of Nate. Oh, it's Nate Snell, right?
Yes, it is.
I can only think of Blake Snell. So who's another guy who's also not having it, generally speaking?
You know what? Nor should he be. I don't think.
All right.
He's getting a, I don't know, he's probably getting a perfectly fair deal. I should keep my mouth shut. I don't need to cause trouble.
Well, we're going to put some stuff. We may put a few of these cards on the Instagram feed or on the and on the Facebook page. So check them out there. If you've got thoughts, comments, favorite cards from that time, favorite players from that time, tell us about it.
Yeah, and I'm going to come up with some TikTok dances that hopefully will start trending related to what we do here.
I'm excited about that. All right, so check that out on TikTok. Really, I think what you'll just need to do is go to TikTok, and whatever Kevin is doing is going to be the most popular thing on there.
Almost certainly.
You won't even have to look for it. It's going to find you. All right. Well, Kevin, until next time, good talking to you, man.
Likewise. Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.